Last year, Adam and I and a few hundred friends of DeSoto gathered in the Masonic Lodge inside a cemetery in the heart of Hollywood. Were we there to practice some dark rite? Some sinister ritual designed to bring deceased Star Trek actors back to the plane of the living? To bring an unholy horde of undead nerd celebrities to Earth to consume the brains of the living? No, we were just doing our live show of the Share Your Embarrassment Tour. It's our review of Star Trek V, and we filmed it. We just wanted to let you know to get ready for that live stream announcement coming next week. If you're a Max Fun member and you support our shows, you'll get access to discounted tickets from membership at MaximumFun.org. So, good time to make sure those emails are delivering properly to your inbox. Either way, we'll be announcing ticket links soon here and on our mailing list that you can sign up for at podshop.biz. The Share Your Embarrassment Tour is coming to your living room for one last stop, and you're not going to want to miss it.
Here's to the finest crew in Starfleet. Engage.
Welcome to The Greatest Generation, a Star Trek podcast by two guys who are a little bit embarrassed to have a Star Trek podcast. I'm one of your hosts, Adam Pranica.
I am your other host, Benjamin R. Harrison.
How's today then, Ben?
Today's okay. Lovely, relaxing day. I was just walking my dog and I decided to pop into a coffee shop and get a nice cold brew to walk around the neighborhood and sip on, and he saw a pigeon about 5 minutes after I bought it, bolted at it, and it slipped out of my hands, crashed on the ground, totally unsalvageable.
Oh.
Yeah.
Like end of Usual Suspect style?
It was a mess. So I got home, and I've made myself a margarita, which
That's
is kind of the opposite
better than
of
that, isn't it?
Of an iced coffee.
Yeah. Have you ever been pigeon happy, Ben?
My dog is singularly obsessed with the idea of catching a pigeon. And I don't know if, like, I feel like if I was a parent and I was at such pains to tell my child that they would never succeed in their goal, I would be a terrible parent. But, like, every time I walk him, I have to tell him, you're never going to catch a pigeon, and every time you try, I will stop you.
Aren't pigeons everywhere in New York? Isn't that sort of a problem if you have a pigeon-obsessed dog?
Yes, Adam. New York is an urban place.
You really take great umbrage with any stereotypical statement I make about New York.
Yeah,
It's not that I'm making fun of it. I'm just telling you what I've heard.
Yeah, we have them here. But enough bullshit, Adam. I was gonna ask if you had any interest in going card diving with your friend Ben today.
I've got a great interest in that, Ben.
The game is a five card stud. The game is exceedingly simple. Part of this is just the cards, data.
Time to pluck a pigeon.
Adam, I have two orders of business before we start ripping into packs. The first is, let's each count where we're at so I can tell how far behind I am. I have 7 packs here.
I have 14.
Okay, so I'm 7 behind you. But, as recently looking through my Series 2 cards, and I discovered that I had a special card that I did not initially identify as such when I opened it.
Uh-huh.
I have a card here that is the card for Ethics, the Worf is Paralyzed episode.
Yeah.
It was personally signed in pen by Juan Ortiz, but I didn't spot it as a special when we were opening. So can we say I'm merely 6 packs behind you?
I don't know, man. It sounds pretty sketchy to me.
Well, I'm offering this to you as a fig leaf and also so that your little victory doesn't have an asterisk next to it.
Oh, I don't want any asterisk victories, that's for sure.
All right, well, so, should we open some cards?
I accept your terms. Yeah, let's do it.
All right.
get a special in the first pack.
Damn it.
And it's a good one. It's one of those cartoonified crew members.
Uh-huh.
It is.
Who you got?
Ro Laren.
Ah.
We haven't seen her in a while. I don't know. She might not be on the show anymore.
That's my Ro. I've got Ro Envy.
Yeah.
Oh, I got a special card.
In your first pack? God damn
it. Pack number two. I have a signed Gates McFadden card.
What?
This limited edition autograph has been personally signed by Gates McFadden, so it's not one of the white border B character signature cards that we've gotten before. This card does not have a number. It is horizontal in its aspect ratio.
Damn.
And let me see if I can look this up.
Is it a photo of her?
It is.
Fuck. Unless I get Whoopi, you basically won the whole thing at this point.
Yeah, it's signed in silver pen. I don't see anything like this online.
Personally,
I'm seeing a lot of other signed Gates McFaddens on the eBay, but I don't see this one. Well, I'm... Oh, there's... I see one. $65.
Damn!
That'll buy us a few more boxes, Ben.
That'll buy us one more box, I believe.
Yeah, unfortunately, that's the truth. Did I tell you that I saw a $1,000 Jaeger on eBay not too long ago? The Jaeger bubble is still in full effect.
That's beautiful. I sure hope it isn't somebody that got one at one of our live shows last year.
There is something about the cards that I gave away at our live show, something only I know, that does not diminish their value in any way, but I can tell you that none of those have been put on eBay.
Whoa.
I could recognize all of them.
Unbelievable, Adam.
Yeah.
You're a diabolical maniac.
Fucking Jaegers. I could put a kid through college off of that stack of Jaegers I have.
What kid?
Too bad that'll never happen.
Well, what do you say we get into our episode, Adam?
Yeah, I think it's time. Time to talk about season 6, episode 25, Timescape.
This is becoming a speech.
You're the captain, sir. You're entitled.
Not entitled to ramble on about something everyone knows.
We start this episode... Riker's in Six Bay. He's been boxing with Data's kitty.
I was putting down the bowl of food. The next thing I know, there's a hissing ball of fur coming at my face.
And he's got a big scrape on the face to prove it.
I hate cats.
Will Riker has been subject to a lot of head scrapes this season.
Yeah. I like how he says that he was trying to feed Spot and, like, on cue, Dr. Crusher's there to provide exposition to anybody who doesn't know who Spot is.
Data's cat.
It is the cat equivalent of Wesley, my son.
I hate cats.
Data's cat.
Spot.
I love cats.
Yeah, not great. Also not really believable, because every time we've seen Spot the cat has just been, like, laying there. Not an aggressive cat.
Hissing ball of fur.
Yeah.
And also, that's ensign work, isn't it?
Yeah, I can't
believe... Why do you get Commander Riker to do this job?
Yeah, you definitely don't... You don't ask up when you're asking coworkers for favors.
Boy, is that the truth.
Like, this scene is here to establish that Data is not around. And Riker gets called up to the bridge. The doctor offers to... take over in the role of cat watcher, and he chucks a phaser at her, says, "You're gonna need this." Just like, man, like, just tossing a phaser seems super dangerous.
It really does.
I mean, I guess they must have safeties, but still, it's not good firearm technique, you know?
It doesn't sound like credible firearm policy either.
You mean that there's just one in, like, a random drawer in Six Bay?
No, I mean, like, when you're the commander of a starship, like, there should be some lockout, tagout action happening. Like to even withdraw a phaser from Six Bay should require a little bit of effort.
Yeah.
But I guess they're just laying around like tricorders.
Yep. They never have aliens that they, you know, don't necessarily trust fully in Six Bay ever.
There's never a phaser around when they get boarded, though.
That is true. So Riker gets up onto the bridge, and Worf is explaining that there's a Romulan distress signal. They are still 13 hours away from rendezvousing with the captain. And so Riker makes the decision to go look into this Romulan situation. So we cut to a runabout class starship with Geordi, Troy, Data, and Captain Picard aboard. And they are coming back from a conference. And so far, they seem to be more or less unscathed.
At first, I was thinking of the runabout as just a Previa XXXO. But, like, it actually has an NCC number. Like, the Winnebago size Previa is a starship.
Yeah.
And it is really big.
Yeah, it's roomy as fuck in the back. Like, they're definitely not maximizing the use of the space. It is designed for comfort.
Yeah, and it helps. It's sort of like how you stage a house that you're putting up for sale by making the furniture small. Like, there's a giant back room in this thing, and there's like a tiny banquet table and chairs around it. Really makes the space look big.
It really does. They're having like a nice crew dinner. Troy is humble bragging about some scientist that was hitting on her at the conference.
I'm doing a thesis on interspecies mating rituals. Would you care to join me?
Just fun.
Yeah, they're sort of doing that post-conference gab sesh.
Yeah. I'm sure we'll do one of these when our tour is over.
Sure. You have to.
This is the scene where Captain Picard famously mimics the guy who just keeps talking in one long, unbroken sentence.
I always thought he was talking about Data in that scene, like hearing the song for the first time. I was like, oh yeah, like he has to be describing him. And so when this line of dialogue came out, I was pleasantly surprised that it was just about a random.
Why would he be doing that Eastern European accent if he was talking about Data?
Yeah, is that what he's doing?
I think he's doing like a Russian accent or something like that.
It's fun to do impressions, isn't it?
It is. Especially if people that are just a different culture from you.
Oh, yeah. He's not being mean about it. The meanness is about the ramble on. It's not necessarily about his speech affectations.
Yeah. Well, he does. He definitely has like a pretty insulting expression on his face when he's doing it.
Uh-huh.
Like if this guy was in the room, you know, or saw a recording of this, I feel like he'd be really embarrassed and his feelings would be really hurt.
Yeah, not nice. But it's okay to not be nice sometimes, right? Like, this is not a point in the show where the Roddenberry maxim of no interpersonal conflicts still holds. Like, I think this is realistic and fun.
Mm-hmm.
Making fun of people doesn't make you a bad person. That's what I'm trying to say, Ben.
Well, it makes you a bad person, but it doesn't make these characters bad people.
Thanks.
Because you're so relentless and mean about it.
Those are the most popular ways that people describe me.
So as they're sitting here gabbing, Troy looks up and everybody is like frozen in space. And she like stands up in shock. And then they kind of unpause and they're all like, what happened, Troy? Like, why are you all of a sudden standing there with a shocked look on your face? And she explains to them that everybody was just paused.
You just stopped and then started again. I can't explain it.
Technically, they mix up the shots here in an interesting way when they pull this off, right? So you get the shot, the single of Picard, and he is clearly digitally frozen. But then when you go wide and you have Troy's movement, you have to do that practically. And so everyone is acting still in those angles.
I think that
and so
now,
cutting back and forth between them is the thing that sells it.
Yeah. I think nowadays you could digitally freeze everybody in the shot, but because of the era and like the comping techniques they had available to them and like the relative, like they could have frozen them, but it would have cost a lot more in these days. So
I thought the actors who were asked to be still did a great job throughout the ep. Like, you didn't see the chest movements. You didn't see the hand wobble that so often gives it away.
Yeah, I feel like I caught like one or two little mess ups, but generally speaking, like they do this a whole bunch of times. Like, this is like the main thing that happens in this episode is people being frozen, and
yeah,
it's fucking great. It's very well done.
Yeah.
So we come back from our opening theme, and they're looking into this, and they're taking it seriously. Like, they're kind of trying to see if like this what happened in Troy's mind or if it happened in reality, and they're like exploring that when she freezes, and so they all get to see like what happened from her perspective.
It's a weird sort of like buffering that happens that everyone gets to experience.
Yeah. Did you see that she was stimming the way she taught Barkley to? Tapping behind her ear?
Yeah, that was a nice callback. It seems like a uniquely Star Trek thing to take someone at their word when they say this has happened to them.
Yeah.
You know?
This crazy thing has happened to me.
Yeah, as soon as Troy says this, there is not even a second of, really? Maybe something's wrong with you. There is never any point where they accuse her of being ill or having a problem. It is very specifically and right away a, what is happening to all of us, if that's the case.
Yeah, they treat it as like she had an authentic experience. She's telling her truth, and so like it's pretty quick that they get evidence that something is going on. And what they figure out is that there are these bubbles all over the space that they're in that are like time moving at different speeds. So like at one point they like catch one of the wheels in the mud of one of these, and it like burns through all the fuel in their left engine.
Their use of statistics here to prove the hypothesis is really great. Like, they're out of fuel because, according to their instruments, the engine has run for, like, 40 days or something.
Yeah.
Which is nuts. And then, like, in another scene, Picard reaches into the fruit bowl and retracts it in horror and pain, and he's grown like 5 super long coke nails.
Yeah,
because his hand has aged.
It's pretty gnarly. It's
can you imagine having one old hand? like a trucker, right? Have you seen like stories about truckers who always have their left arm, like you'll see pictures of their left arm, the arm that hangs out the window, being super tan and old looking compared to their right that stays inside the cab?
Oh, man.
Picard's got that forever now. He's got trucker hand.
Yeah, that's gross.
How quickly do you think he's got to clip those nails?
Well, he clips them super quickly because they all run back into the cockpit in the next scene and his nails are trimmed.
Yeah, not great nail continuity in this episode. I really need to see him in the runabout bathroom, like huddled over the bathroom wastebasket, like clip.
If it was really realistic, it would show him like looking in 10 different drawers before he figures out where the nail clippers are. So they've figured out like more or less what is happening, which is that there are all these like fucked up bubbles of space-time around. The entrepreneur is not where it's supposed to be, but they figure out where in space it is, and they pull up to it, and they look out the window, and there is this frozen scene in space of a Romulan warbird firing shots at the entrepreneur. The entrepreneur has like some kind of energy beam going back to it. They ask Data if he can tell what that energy beam is, and he says, it's impossible to tell from a visual inspection, which I really like. And so, like, they're a little bit stumped. Like, Picard is This is like a really emotional moment for Picard. He's looking at his ship on the brink of destruction, and he's like, we gotta get the fuck on there. Like, remember that terrible episode, Time's Arrow, and how we like made armbands that let us travel in time for that? Can we do that for this?
This is an Adam Nimoy directed episode, Ben. You may remember him as being famous for the hit episode Rascals.
I think he had a lot better source material this time around.
Super complex of a production, it feels like, on this one.
And if you look back at our review of Rascals, like, the two things I think we thought were the worst were the script and the editing.
Yeah.
And this is a much more challenging script to throw at a director who turned in kind of a clunker last time in the chair. And, like, I would say that the editing is great and the directing is great.
I didn't notice that it was heavily directed. It was not stylized as much as Rascals was to me. And I mean that as a compliment.
Yeah, and the editing...
Like, nothing you did took me out of the story.
Right, and the editing never calls attention to itself. Like, the best editing is not necessarily, you know, Whiplash, where it's, like, cutting on the beat and, like, adding to the rhythm of the scene. Like, sometimes the best editing is editing that, like, just moves the story along without calling any attention to itself. Like, you don't even notice when the camera cuts.
Rick Berman says, my feeling was that nobody should be asked to be judged on a work that was so unusual in terms of having to come in and direct these kids. I basically said I would like to give him another shot to work with adults.
Is that real?
Well, that's magnanimous, Rick.
Nice.
Jeez.
So they put on their little Hitler Youth armbands, and they turn them on, and Troy, like, almost passes out.
The explanation for this is real fun. It's almost like going invisible scuba diving. They're like, put on these armbands, it'll keep you safe from what's going to happen over there. It's a suit without having to wear a suit.
Yeah.
But the effects still present themselves.
They say that the force field is like skin tight so that they can manipulate objects and stuff.
Yeah.
It's interesting. And so they beam over, and they beam directly onto the bridge, and what they find is, like, pretty surprising. There's blast marks all over the place. There's, you know, it kind of looks like Riker is being killed. He's, you know, like, frozen in time. Looks like he's being killed. They're able to look at computer screens but not, you know, push buttons or anything. It's a bit like the episode where Ensign Ro and Geordi are dead.
It made me think a lot of that episode.
There's a lot of tropes from that episode borrowed here, but they're all kind of used in different ways.
Picard's attitude about this is strangely neutral. Like, he goes into full detective mode here, where I think a little bit more emotion would have been welcome. You know, like, he has returned to his ship, and his ship is mid being fucked up and a bunch of his crew is being thrashed, and there's never a moment where he's like, oh god, this is terrible. There's no emotion to what he's seeing. What he's seeing is fairly emotional to witness.
He's also just, like, confused as fuck. Like, they've got Romulans in six bay shooting the doctor, but then in the transporter bay they're transporting Romulans over, and they look like refugees, you know, like they're transporting over Romulans that look like they need help and aren't bad. And in engineering, they find a big hole blown out of the side of the warp core and a bunch of smoke pouring out of it. And Data explains, like,
time is moving forward at an infinitesimal rate,
and that cloud is getting bigger while we're standing here.
Right, and that introduces the countdown on the episode and spurs some action, right? Because now they can't just linger. They need to see if they can do something about this, otherwise they're definitely going to lose the ship.
Right, and I mean, they have to also grapple with the idea that they've already lost the Doctor, which is not really dealt with from like a feeling standpoint. Like Troy goes and looks at it and like reports back, but they're not like, oh my God, like no matter what happens, she's dead.
Yeah, I mean, the cat basket phaser that was shot at her hit her in the abdomen, and then like you can see through her.
Yeah, it's really death becomes her-ing.
Yeah, the cat basket phaser was set to becomes her.
Which is a
statement that no one outside of the show would ever have a guess about.
It is the guiding principle of a Starfleet base. Have you got find it within yourself to stand up, tell the truth? You don't deserve to wear that uniform.
So at this point in the story, Picard succumbs to what is called later temporal narcosis. And the way that the viewer is supposed to understand this is with a Data turn to camera, as he explains that it's like getting the bends when you're deep sea diving.
It's not like getting, he says it's like nitrogen narcosis, which is a real thing.
I know that's a real thing, but there is no way that is anything like what is happening to Picard. It is only a bit of trivia to help the viewer understand what's happening.
I mean, yeah, like this is a weird part of the script because I guess they need to motivate them getting back to the runabout and like reconnoitering the situation a little bit. But it does kind of, you know, like they basically ask Picard to just like flop around in the Shimoda corner going nutso for 30 seconds while Data explains this, right?
You get a real fun take from Peace Stew here. The crazy person laugh is a special type of acting, I think. It's like acting drunk.
You don't need to tell me, Adam. It's why I don't act anymore.
I didn't like it when Patrick Stewart did it either.
You're going to twist that knife again, huh? Know your place, Ben.
You got a face for podcast, and that's about it.
So yeah, they talk this over and they're like, well, maybe we can figure out what's going on if we go on the Romulan ship. So they go over there and they like open up the Romulan warp core and they discover that there is a like kind of like a living organism in it, right?
Yeah, they pop open a hatch. It's like a mini space butthole.
Well, as they're scanning this thing, the time in this place starts moving again. The Romulans that are all frozen around the engineering section like move back into action, and they're kind of desperately trying to stop their ship from blowing up. And they're saying that the power transfer from the Entrepreneur is what's causing it. There's a systems overload, and They're trying to shut it down. They're trying to, you know, pull the plug so that it doesn't blow their ship up. And this Romulan runs in, and he's definitely like not with the others. he's observing the action from a remove in the same way that the Starfleets are. And when like time reverses and goes back to where it was, He freezes in place, and they like catch him, right?
I'm trying to think about what this is a callback to, but it's a callback to that same Romulan episode, right?
It really is, yeah. Oh, and the other thing that happens during the scene is we cut back to the runabout, and Picard is the only one there, and he's just looking out the window as time, you know, kicks back into effect. And all of the Romulan disruptors rip into his ship and destroy it. So you see the like flash on his face as he watches his ship explode. And then like the Romulans put their fang down, flip it and reverse it. And the explosion goes in reverse order and the ship comes back together.
They really chose the right ship to be on at that moment, right?
They sure did. Yeah, what would have happened to them?
Ben,
Are there?
Yeah, if they had been on the Entrepreneur when it exploded, would they have come back on the reversal? I bet they would have.
Would they have, like, suffocated in space while it was exploded?
Right. That is some weird canon.
Well, it's a good thing that they were where they were.
Yeah.
Geordi is, like, looking at one of these consoles, and this other weird Romulan is, like, looming over his shoulder, and they're like, was this guy here when we came here the first time? And he, like, leaps out. He grabs Geordi. Geordi's force field disappears, and they both go down on the floor, and, like, Geordi is convulsing.
Yeah, he's not in good shape, and his vitals are going in the turlet, and they rip off his armband.
Yeah. This is pretty cool thinking on Troy's part, right? Like, she...
Well, it's also totally fucking batshit. Like, Troy is not qualified to make this call at all. And in the moment, she's like, rip? I think it would be a good idea if we left him in this time, because ripping off the armband freezes the person who is without the armband. So they're like, well, we clearly don't have the resources to save his life. If we just put him on ice, maybe there will be a chance to save him.
Right.
Which is really complex thinking for 2 seconds for Deanna Troi.
Well, yeah, but it's like one of those, you know, you have to make a snap judgment, and she's kind of, we've got the mechanics of this problem down. There's some bubbles where time moves super fast and some bubbles where time moves super slow. And she's like, if this armband comes off, he will be in the super slow time and he won't be dying.
Yeah.
Like, he won't die instantly.
That's a great point. Like, she is not just plot adjacent here. Like, she is instrumental to the things that this away team is doing.
She is not a potted plant at all in this episode, I don't think. And I mean, like, her abilities are also, like, useful in interesting ways in this episode. Like, they talk about when the gang freezes up while they're having dinner, how they go blank to her from an emotional standpoint. Like, that's cool. Like, that gives a dimension to this that would be hard to describe otherwise, you know?
The last time people went blank to Troy, Troy went crazy. So it appears as though she's better able to grapple with that idea this time around.
I had to go blank to her. I had to use the music box. It was the only way I could think to protect my house from her prying abilities as an empath.
The real estate market as it is makes a man do desperate things in this overcooked market. Your Kevin has changed. What happened to your Kevin?
I think both of our Kevins have changed, Adam. I listened to an old episode recently, and we both sound super different with Kevin.
Maybe this show has changed us.
Whoa.
In ways we can't possibly understand.
So they leave Geordi on the Romulan ship, and they take the Romulan back to the runabout, and he's got, like, tweaked. He's got, like, T-Pain vocals. Like, he's on an auto-tune machine. And he's like, Captain Picard, I'm an alien from a different time period. I'm trying to protect my young. There's another one of me still around. Yeah, so these aliens, like, thought that the warp core of the Romulan ship was a great place to shit out a bunch of kids, because the way they give birth is via black holes, and Romulan ships are run on, like, artificial black holes, I guess.
It was my understanding that you couldn't get pregnant by going into a black hole, but I guess miracles happen. Do you care about these unborn space butthole children?
That's a good question, because the episode really doesn't.
Right. That's what I'm getting at.
The episode, it treats these aliens as intruders that have, you know, put the lives of the Romulans and the people on the Entrepreneur at risk and must be stopped at all costs, which is kind of an uncharacteristic choice for Picard to make, but he also doesn't normally watch his ship get blown up in the course of making a decision about how to deal with a new life and new civilization. And I wonder if that kind of factors into the way he plays his hand here.
He's a little bit like a guy who's gone out to a car that he's left outside for a while and squirrels have made nests under the hood. He's got to get rid of those squirrels if he wants to drive the car, and he doesn't really care what happens to him in the process.
Yeah. I mean, also, like, by the time they reverse all the explosion, the aliens, the grown-up aliens have both died. So I don't know how they would save these babies when they don't, like, really know who or what they are. Because they're, like, trans-dimensional beings. They have no way of, like, phoning up some more of the aliens and be like, hey, listen, like, your two little buddies bought the farm while we were trying to unfuck this situation. Can you come get your kids? Like, that's not within their power. So, like, once those two guys are dead, they don't have any, like, any recourse on the baby saving, right?
A long time ago, I made the case that the crew and Captain Picard in particular should and could show a little bit more wonder in their circumstance. And I think this is a part where it would be okay for him to emote that.
Yeah.
I mean, he watched his ship get destroyed and everyone he knows on board die moments ago. He basically just noted that event while watching it. Deanna tells him that his main love interest, his unrequited love interest, has been shot point blank with a phaser. He notes that. And in Space Butthole Babies scene, he also just notes that people are making babies inside warp cores. At no point is he ever even bemused by that. Like, he's so sober in his absorption of this information that I think it cuts against the idea that I wanted to feel something for any of these points in the story, and it was hard for me to as long as he didn't.
Well, I got a lot of emotion in the scene where he watches the ship blow up. So,
yeah.
You know, my headcanon on this is just that it's like, it is such a devastating idea that the ship and all souls aboard would be lost for him, that it kind of overrides a lot of his more compassionate instincts.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, like it would have been nice to get a beat of Picard talking through those feelings.
Beveler. Must save Beveler. I can see you. It's almost there, Ben. Come on.
I can't do it. I can't do it.
That'll be the day, Adam. The day that you get me to do a cheesy impression, Rudy.
My love is a fever, long in jail for that, which longer nurses the disease. Tell me more, you'll have to go again.
So we have this fun climax where they beam back over, and they kind of, I guess Data is running this show from engineering. Picard goes to the bridge, Troy goes to Six Bay, and they're kind of trying to set themselves up so that they can intervene in all of the nasty shit. And what they learned when they were aboard the Romulan ship was that the tricorder can cause time to go in reverse for a little while before it starts back up. And so, like, their plan is, like, shut down the power transfer, which has something to do with the warp core blowing up, get that Romulan to not shoot Beverly, and get the get whatever is happening to Riker not to happen so that Riker doesn't die.
And luckily, they have just enough people to cover all these bases.
Yeah. So they all get in position, and they, like, watch as Beverly gets unshot, the warp core gets unbreached, and Riker gets unknocked down. And then they like, hit the button, and it goes back. And just as they're about to, like, start saving the day, a female Romulan grabs onto Data, and she is the second secret alien. And they go down, and Data is not quite fast enough to get back up on his feet until the, like, ensign engineer, age-appropriate, to not initiate the power transfer. I couldn't believe my eyes, Adam. They found somebody not in their late 50s to play an ensign.
It's like a job training program on the flagship. Like, are you ready to have a second career in Starfleet? Call this number.
Complete this art test. Draw this turtle, this pirate.
And this Klingon. And if your art is good enough, we'll station you on the flagship of the Federation.
I'm sure that's how it works.
Yeah.
They can't get the power transfer unset up, but they managed to get the controls of the runabout rerouted to the bridge of the Entrepreneur, and Captain Picard pilots the runabout into the power stream, which causes the runabout to explode, the power transfer to stop, and they've, like, beamed out the Romulans fast enough to save everybody. Troy managed to, like, slap the kitty cat dustbuster out of the Romulan's hand before he could kill Beverly, and he's like, oh, I wasn't trying to shoot her. There was a bad alien here. Which is never really explained, right? Like, why was he trying to shoot at this lady that's trying to save her babies? The fuck is wrong with you, Romulan?
Yeah, that was a little over the top, right? That's why it's so dangerous to have open carry Romulans around. Like, shit just pops off in a way that it doesn't have to.
All right, guys, we are happy to save you from your warp core breach on your warbird, but everybody has to leave their kitten basket behind. You cannot beam over with those.
It's like leaving a cell phone outside of a conference room. Like, can't bring those in the six bay.
Yeah.
I thought the idea of blowing up the runabout was interesting because it really prevents them from having to answer the question, where the hell do they park that thing?
Yeah. Would that, like, fit in the shuttle bay?
I don't think there's a shuttle bay big enough for it.
Maybe there were some Deep Space Nine people hanging around on the ship and they were going to, like, take it back to Deep Space Nine when they're done with it. Or maybe it just fits in a shuttle bay. Who knows?
That, I don't know.
That main shuttle bay is really big. I was looking at those schematics. It's so much bigger than it's ever shown to be on the show.
Yeah, and, like, I want to get the scene where the Enterprise is given a bunch of runabouts at a starbase.
Yeah.
Like they do some refitting of the ship.
Mm.
They swap out a bunch of their bunk beds for these runabouts.
They embiggen the shuttle bay.
Great upgrade.
Yeah. Now you're a starship that has starships in it.
It's Admiral Exhibit.
I heard you like starships, so we put some starships in your starship so you can starship your starship while you're starshipping your starship. One more button to do up before we've concealed all our cleavage. And it is Data sitting in his quarters, boiling water and watching the pot. Riker comes in and he's giving Data the new duty roster or schedule or whatever, and Data explains that
I've been testing the aphorism, a watched pot never boils.
But whether or not he is staring at this kettle of water, it boils exactly the same amount of time every time.
Yeah, he's clearly got one of those cooktops that boils water in 90 seconds or whatever. It's really nice. Data's kind of an idiot though, right?
Yeah, well, Riker suggests, like, turn off your internal chronometer, because humans don't have those. I mean, it's a weird suggestion. It's a weird... Everything about it is weird.
It's a real cute button. Didn't really stick with me.
Yeah, you almost didn't remember it happened.
I didn't remember it happening. I just watched this episode. Didn't really have an effect.
Hmm.
Riker sort of slinks into Data's room as if he's supposed to be afraid of his cat. They should have done that thing where they throw the cat at him from off screen.
Now that would have made an impression.
Yeah. I would have remembered the button on this episode if that had happened.
Yeah.
Did you like this episode, Ben?
I did. I think that it is not mountain worthy for all of the reasons we have discussed, but it's a fun premise, and it moves nicely. It maintained my interest, and I thought while it kind of waved its hands to get past a couple of the issues with the aliens, it's an interesting one. And like that scene where Picard draws the smiley face in the cloud of smoke is so memorable to me, you know? It's like one of the great Picard moments, even though the explanation of it is really weird.
That may be the main takeaway of this entire episode.
Did you like the episode?
That and the street value of a lost runabout.
Sure.
I'm not sure that I did. And I think it all comes down to the amount, like these characters are proxies for the viewer, and if the characters aren't emotional or caring about their circumstances, then it's not satisfying for me to watch them interact with those circumstances. So I came away from this episode just feeling a little bit numb about it. Like, I wanted to feel more than I did, and that might just be a me problem, but I'm going to choose to believe that it was an episode problem. There's nothing wrong with me, Ben. I'm doing great.
All right. I'll take your word for it, Adam.
Yeah, I'm not sure anyone believes that. Do we have any Priority One messages?
I am sure that we do.
Priority One message from Starfleet coming in on secured channel.
Need a supplemental income.
Supplemental income?
Supplemental. Yeah, it's extra.
By the interest alone, could be enough to buy this ship.
We have a personal Priority One message here. It is from Samuel Clemens.
Oh, no.
And in parentheses, it says, please read in crustiest Jerry Hardin voice possible.
Don't.
It is for Matt Gifford. Message goes like this. I fear the hosts of this newfangled audio newspaper have missed the incalculable opportunity to employ my legendary wit. Humanity.
Can we send our money back to this person and not air this?
Lost in the vastness of Comic Prairie. But I feel it essential to inform you that in between scenes, I fucked Deanna Troi.
What?
And remember, the only person that can write your story is you.
This person is a maniac. I can't believe that this even got through the filter.
There's a little bit of walk-in creep in my Jerry Hardin as Samuel Clemens impression.
There's impression creep all over the place in all of your impressions, Adam. We've talked about this several times. I hate
there
that impression.
There's no unmolested impression. Like, there's no purity to any impression that I have.
I hate that impression so much because it's a bad impression of a bad impression.
Do we have another P1, Ben?
We do. It is from Marbles from the Boston Kennel of TGG H3. It is for the Greatest Generation Hash House Harriers. Goes like this. This P1 is to announce that we'll be hanging a trail at the Greatest Gen Con 2017. Details to come, but we can promise Pack and Hares in the Shiggy, Pack and Hares on the ice, a trail Worf could solve, and all the drunk Shimodas, Dustbuster shots, and no hoose knocks, on. P.S. Secret Ninja Trail at the Boston Show, rage. Horns.
There's a lot here to unpack, Ben.
Yeah, I mean, or not.
Something is happening at this Boston show.
Yeah, the Boston show has sold like as fast as about any of them. It seems like people are really excited about that one.
A lot of hairs in the shiggy for that one, Ben.
Yeah, is that like Cats in the Cradle?
I have no idea. Well, one trail that even Worf could solve is the path to MaximumFun.org/Jumbotron, where you, yes you, can have a priority one message just like this for the low, low price of $100. Commercial messages are $200, and they are a great way to support the ongoing production of this show. Thanks, guys. Ben, did you find yourself a drunk Shimoda?
Incredible.
Drunk Shimoda!
I did, but I would love to hear yours first.
It's super obvious, but it's Picard's temporal narcosis scene. It is so close to Shimoda Corner, even,
yeah.
That one could almost draw a line between the two and make the case that maybe Shimoda Corner itself is haunted.
It's haunted with drunkenness?
It's slathered in temporal narcosis.
It's narcotic in nature.
That's what I'm saying.
Maybe it's not drunk Shimoda. Maybe in this episode, it's high Shimoda.
Is that what makes Geordi so weird? He spends a lot of time there.
Yeah, he sure does.
So that's my Shimoda. No one is acting bigger than Peace do in this scene.
Yeah, that was mine. I was gonna change horses midstream if you came up with something much more interesting than that, but that's like the obvious drunk Shimoda in this episode. So we've got a daily double.
There are very few active characters in this story because of how it's constructed and what's happening. Like, because everyone's frozen, you have a very small sample size of Shimodas that it could possibly be.
That's true. It's an interesting way of
looking at it. So I don't feel bad about this selection.
Yeah. I mean, maybe we give an honorable mention to Romulan, who shot at the desperate alien mother who's just there trying to save her children.
Yeah, like, this is
why... And didn't
why...
check his, like, the, like, direction he was aiming his weapon for people behind who could potentially get hit.
It's why you're not supposed to shoot, like... towards a crowd.
Yeah.
Like, you gotta check what's downrange of your weapon.
Yeah.
Not great.
Tomok Angelad at Tanagra.
When I was growing up, I didn't have anyone to tell me about personal grooming. I had to learn these things on my own. So I'm here to save you some embarrassment and recommend the grooming tools that I use. The products from Manscaped. Now, this is a company that constantly has its mind on your bush. Imagine the meetings they have. Imagine the pictures they have in their PowerPoint presentations. Now imagine your junk looking its best thanks to the Lawnmower 5.0. This thing is the latest bunch trimming technology with two interchangeable heads, a standard one for taking just a little off the top, and a new foil blade to go smooth wherever your heart desires. Get 20% off and free shipping with the code SCARVES at manscaped.com. That's 20% off and free shipping with the code SCARVES at manscaped.com. Nothing like a little spring cleaning in your pants.
Are you looking for the perfect gift to celebrate the moms in your life? Aura frames are beautiful Wi-Fi connected digital picture frames that allow you to share and display unlimited photos. Every mom I have ever given an Aura frame to has absolutely loved it. And that includes a lot of moms I know. This is a gift that I have personally given many, many times. And it's great. I can upload photos from my phone the moment I take them. And that means that mom or grandma out there is going to get pictures of their loved ones delivered to their living room. Right now, Aura is having a great sale for Mother's Day. Listeners can save on the perfect gift by visiting AuraFrames.com to get $30 off plus free shipping on their best-selling frame. That's AuraFrames.com and use the code SCARVES at checkout to show your support for our show. Terms and conditions apply.
Hey, when you listen to podcasts, it really just comes down to whether or not you like the sound of everyone's voices. My voice is one of the sounds you'll hear on the podcast Dr. Game Show, and this is the voice of co-host and fearless leader Joe Firestone.
This is a podcast where we play games submitted by listeners, and we play them with callers over Zoom we've never spoken to in our lives. So that is basically the concept of the show. Pretty chill.
So take it or leave it, bucko. And here's what some of the listeners have to say.
It's funny, wholesome, and it never fails to make me smile.
I just started listening and I'm already binging it. I haven't laughed this hard in ages. I wish I'd discovered it sooner.
You can find Dr. Game Show on MaximumFun.org.
Video games can make you laugh.
They can make you cry.
They can even make you sing.
We're the hosts of Triple Click.
It's a podcast about video games.
This is an exciting time for new games, from Diablo to Final Fantasy.
From Starfield to Street Fighter.
From Zelda to, oh, who are we kidding? We're just going to talk about Zelda.
Whether you play games or you just like hearing about them, we've got you covered.
Find us at MaximumFun.org or wherever you get your podcasts. Bye.
What do we have coming up on the next episode, Van?
The next episode is Season 6, Episode 26, Descent, Part 1. When the Borgs return to do battle with the Federation, they boast a new individuality and tempt Data when they help him feel his first emotion. Do you remember this episode, Adam?
I do. I do remember this episode, and I remember really liking it.
Yeah, me too.
The Borgs are back in town. Welcome back, Borgs.
Welcome back, welcome back, welcome back. Man, there's just so many little songs that we can do about the Borgs.
It's a real musical episode.
Man, that time that I sang my little shower song about Buddy Hoosnock.
Mm-hmm.
Fucking so divisive. Like, I'd say that like 80% of what we heard back was people thought that it was amusing, and then like, oh, there were just 20% of people that were so fucking mad about it.
I hate your joy, Ben. I hate it so much. That's not why I tune into this show.
Seriously.
Yeah, ease up.
It was some wild shit.
Well, you're a divisive figure on our program, Ben.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think we've always known that.
Yeah, no kidding.
Well, one way that our viewership is not divided in the least is their interest in talking about our show after the fact, talking about it after, Ben, in places like Twitter using the hashtag GreatestGen. Got a Facebook page, Facebook group, Reddit page, and a Maximum Fun Reddit page.
Yeah, there's a lot of fun hangs out there for people who are interested in having internet hangs. But also,
if you've got complaints about Ben's joy, it's probably a good place to take it.
Yeah, sure. Or just write an email to gofuckyourself at clownpenis.fart.
I want an email address at clownpenis.fart.
I had a friend of mine and I had a scheme where we were going to do a Kickstarter to raise the money to register the top-level domain .fart and then make it like a public good institution. we would form a trust that would administer the .fart domain.
The Fart Trust.
Yeah.
That's related to the Annenberg Foundation.
Right, exactly. We would, you know, support some public radio shows and stuff, get the name out
also
there.
Also supported by viewers like you.
Yeah. I think it just proved to be way too much work when we looked into it, but...
Yeah.
It's too much
work for not a great joke.
Right. Right. A joke that we didn't even originate.
Right.
So... Anyways, we should thank Dark Materia for our theme music and Adam Ragusa, who makes a lot of other great music for us, because he is such a nice guy. And with that, we will be back at you next time with another great episode of Star Trek The Next Generation, and an episode of The Greatest Generation, where now Worf's battle tunic is on lore. What?
Now it seems the ship over there...
Oh, no.
...might be on the verge of exploding, Captain.
Oh, your twain has changed, Adam.
It is. It is totally... It's terrible.
That's a...
I'm cutting that out.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Listener supported.